This season, Toyota Racing is looking for jugglers.
Aha!
Not the ones who toss balls or rings. Fans that can juggle the rigors of a 10-month-long season across many different racing circuits.
Well, what if I added knives?
What if you added GR Cup, Formula Drift, and off-road racing? If you can juggle it all, then we want you. Be part of the action at toyota.com/racing. Toyota, let's go places. Formula Drift is a registered trademark of Formula Drifts Holdings, LLC.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Underage sale prohibited. Introducing Zone Nicotine Pouches, the perfect balance of unparalleled comfort, longer-lasting flavor, and nicotine that satisfies. Whether you're zoning in during the race or zoning out after a tough day at work, Zone gets you there faster and keeps you there longer. Available in 7 flavors and in 6 and 9 milligram strengths. Find Zone at zonepouches.com and retailers near you. Own your Zone with Zone Nicotine Pouches.
It was a season that saw seeds planted by a legend bloom on the biggest stage possible.
I still think of 2004 as part of the healing from 2001.
This has got to be the greatest day of my life.
A season that brought out the best.
We're right in the middle of this championship, so we'll just see what happens at Homestead.
And the worst.
And now they're tackling one another, and a fight is on in the pit area.
While crowning a champion in the most suspenseful way.
We dodged a huge, huge, devastating proposition that would have taken us out of this championship.
A racing season that was one of the most impactful in the sport's history.
There's so much going on behind the scenes in 04, but the headlines that made the sport continue, I think we'll be 25 years from now when we're celebrating the 100th, somebody will look at a yardstick of our history and 2004 is going to be on there.
Motor Racing Network welcomes you to NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. Hello, everybody. I'm Mike Bagley, and welcome into Episode 5 of NASCAR Live Presents 2004, Chasing History. In Episode 4, we revisited Ryan Newman's Father's Day victory at Michigan, Jeff Gordon cementing himself as a championship contender with back-to-back wins at Sonoma and Daytona, and fans once again being disappointed after the Pocono 500 ended under caution. This week, we'll reach the halfway mark of the season and chronicle races 18 through 21 of the 2004 season. Those four races include NASCAR listening to fans and implementing a rule that would help prevent races from ending under caution, and Jeff Gordon scoring a landmark victory at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. But we'll start with emotions boiling over in the Windy City. The date was July 11th, 2004, and the race was the Tropicana 400. It was the fourth trip for the NASCAR Cup Series to the mile-and-a-half Chicagoland Speedway. Coming off those back-to-back wins at Daytona and Sonoma, Jeff Gordon looked like he might be primed for a three-peat when he won the pole for the event and led the field to the green flag alongside Casey Kane.
Coming down to the line, 267 laps to go this afternoon. Green flag goes out as they race off to turn number one. Jeff Gordon at the bottom of the racetrack tries to get away from Casey Kane. He's got a couple of his teammates sandwiched in there also in the form of Jimmy Johnson and Brian Vickers. They go to one.
Advantage, Jeff Gordon here on lap number one.
Gordon led the opening 14 laps of the race before surrendering the lead to Kane. Casey was out front when the first caution flag of the race flew because of an incident involving Kurt Busch and Ryan Newman.
Trouble in turn two. Ryan Newman is around, collects Kurt Busch. Both of them head on into the outside retaining wall, spinning down across the racetrack. Evasive maneuvers by Robbie Gordon and a number of others as they file past. Ryan Newman rolling away with a trail of fluid out the back of that Dodge. Kurt Busch rolls down to the apron. Heavy damage on the Sharpie Rubbermaid Ford. Smoke billowing from underneath that machine.
Following that caution flag, Tony Stewart, who had started 10th that afternoon, took control of the race and led for a 62-lap stretch. Shortly after the race crossed the 100-lap mark, Kane inserted himself back into the picture. It appeared that the two drivers with open-wheel racing backgrounds were the class of the field. After a caution because of oil on the track, Casey Kane and Tony Stewart led the field to green. On that restart, chaos ensued.
Here comes the field down to the line again. Dale Jarrett just in front of Casey Kane, the race leader. It's Tony Stewart trying to find a way to get by as he peeks to the outside in turn one.
And he gets into the back of Casey Kane, who spins and clobbers the wall. Three or four other cars get caught into it. Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jeff Gordon is involved in it. Scott Riggs gets a piece of the action as well. Dave Blaney also involved as cars spin and crash on the outside of turn number one.
Kane and the rest of his Evernham Motorsports team were crushed after seeing another possible chance at victory go up in smoke. But the contact on the racetrack isn't the only contact that went on that day. Following the accident, Kane's crew chief Tommy Baldwin and the rest of the number 9 crew went down to the 20 pit to confront Greg Zipidelli and his crew. What happened after that could only be described as a good old-fashioned brawl.
And the crew chief Tommy Baldwin Jr. for Casey Kane has made his way down and is on the war wagon in the face of Tony Stewart's crew chief Greg Zipidelli. Crew members pushing and shoving. His NASCAR officials get between one another, and now they're tackling one another, and a fight is on in the garage area, in the pit area. Crew members from both sides getting involved. Bobby Labonte's crew coming over. They were pitted nearby teammate Tony Stewart. Pushing and shoving in the pit area here at Chicagoland Speedway.
Well, you knew there was going to be some tempers flaring up for the incident that just happened down in turn number one. The NASCAR officials get in there trying to break it up real quick as the yellow flag is out for yet a fifth time. Let's go back over to turn two.
Casey Kane has climbed out of his Dodge Barney, appears to be okay. Dave Blaney, I believe, also as well has climbed from the AOL Chevrolet. Both cars almost certainly done for the afternoon with heavy-duty damage.
And let's go back down to pit road.
Well, I'm not sure that it's over yet, Barney. These guys, some of the crew members for Casey Kane still involved, others trying to pull those crew members away and take them back to their pit area. But immediately when that happened, the fight broke out. Tommy Baldwin Jr. immediately ran down in the face of crew chief Greg Zipidelli, and they continue to push and shove through the garage area. And as they make their way toward the garage area on the pit lane, a number of other team crew members have come down here to see what's going on. And as we talked about, some of the Bobby Labonte crew members coming over to the aid of Tony Stewart's team. So a wild situation as what happens on the racetrack overflowing onto pit road here at Chicago.
Kane's team owner Ray Evernham was just as mad as his crew was.
Tony on the restart got in the back of Casey. We're leading the race. Tony spins him on the straightaway. And, you know, so that gets my guys mad, gets me mad. I'm walking back to the garage area where they're going to tow our car in, and I'm mad. Like, I'm mad. I look up, and all these people are running down towards Stewart's pit. And sure enough, there's my guys, and they're brawling. I mean, they're brawling heavy. And so we're trying to get everybody, so line them all up, and guys have got fire suits ripped and marks on their face. And I'm like, who started the fight? And they're like, oh, we weren't fighting. So we all get called to the truck, you know, and then me and Tony got into it, which I got on TV, and I said something about whooping his ass. And he's like, come on, whoop my ass.
While the 9 crew tried to downplay what happened to their boss, as you heard on the call of the fight, MRN's Adam Alexander was right in the middle of everything and remembers it vividly.
What I remember is Tommy Baldwin came down, right, and he goes up to the pit box to confront the 20 team. And I believe there was a bit of a misunderstanding and overreaction. I don't know that there would have been a fight, but Tony's guys see this happening. And it's like, you're not going to go after our guy. Now, whether or not Tommy was truly going after him, I don't know, Greg. But he climbed up on the pit box, and someone came over and got a hold of him, and then it was on. And I'm watching this transpire, and I was, if I remember right, I would say that Tony's pit box, which I was covering that day, was beyond the start-finish line. And so you had a pretty good view of turn one where Tony got into Casey on the restart. And so you see that happening. And then here comes Casey's team down, and they confront Tony's group, and then we had a wrestling match right there on the pit lane.
While it was obviously the on-track incident that caused the fisticuffs, Evernham notes that there was a bit of off-track drama involving Stewart and Kane that also might have played a role into what happened that day.
There's a little bit more to the story. Tony and Casey had some off-track stuff going on that may or may not involve the young lady, I don't know.
With Casey Kane out of the picture, it was clear Tony Stewart was the class of the field. And even though he had to wield off challenges from Jimmy Johnson and Casey Kane's teammate Jeremy Mayfield in the back half of the race, the checkered flag was smokes for the taking.
Tony Stewart heading down to the line. He's looking for the white flag. Give him one more lap around this racetrack. He has an advantage now of about a tenth of a straightaway. Crosses the line, takes the white flag, and Jimmy Johnson follows him down.
No challengers in the rearview mirror for Tony Stewart. No lap cars that he'll have to deal with dead ahead. Tony Stewart right on the bottom, heads off turn number two.
Tony Stewart onto the back stretch for the final time this afternoon. Right up next to the outside wall. Sets up for the entrance in the corner number three. Pins spins the car down low and heads for the checkers.
Should be a very interesting victory lane today for Tony Stewart, who picks up his first win since last October at the Lowe's Motor Speedway in Charlotte. He will win today the Tropicana 400 at Chicagoland Speedway.
In victory lane, Tony Stewart addressed both his dominant win and the incident with Casey Kane.
First of all, it's been since Charlotte last year, October of 2003. Welcome back to Gatorade Victory Lane, having a big ice-cold Coke.
Yeah, what an awesome day. I mean, it wasn't exactly as smooth as we'd like to have, obviously. Still don't know what happened on that restart with Casey. Just, got a really good jump and got past the 40 and got back in line. And I don't know if it was, his shift pattern or what, as far as when he was supposed to shift or what. But all of a sudden he checked up and we got in the back of him, turned him around. It could have taken S out just as easy. I'm surprised it didn't tear up the car any more than it did. So, we hate to do that. Hate to have something like that happen. But we had such a good car, it wasn't going to matter anyway. We didn't need to turn him around to get to victory lane. We were going to win this race no matter what.
After Stewart's team was done celebrating, they had to join Evernham, Kane, and the rest of the 9 team in the NASCAR hauler. Evernham has the details on what went down in that meeting.
When we went in there, everybody was still a little bit upset, but everybody was totally denying who did what or who threw the first punch, issue, whatever. Ultimately, we were wrong. Got to pay a little fine for that one because my guys left my pit area and went down into the number 20 pit area. And you look at it like Joe Gibbs is a pro. Zippy was a pro. We're all big boys. As soon as the emotion calmed down, it was funny again.
Even though the victory was marred a bit by the incident, the momentum Stewart had could not be denied. He was coming off a top 5 at Daytona, scored his first win of the year, and was sitting 4th in the point standings, heading into the summer stretch where he had a tendency to thrive. The next track up on that summer stretch was the New Hampshire Motor Speedway. Before the teams got on track that weekend, Stewart and Evernham had a chance to hash things out in his hauler.
It was really funny because the next week, Tony and I, we sat in his bus for 2-3 hours just talking about it and worked it all out. But you know what? With sports is emotion. And you know what? If there's no emotion in sports, people aren't going to watch it. And guys they're going to fight. They're going to get mad. They should be mad. And whether we were right or wrong or, whatever really happened, but that's what sport's about. And these crew members put so much into that race day. Like, everything's about that trophy for everybody. And they work so hard. They sacrifice. And you know what? If somebody does something that they don't like, boys are going to be boys and they're going to fight once in a while. And to me, that's okay as long as it doesn't get out of hand.
Once race day arrived, tensions were a bit higher than usual for the July New Hampshire race. As teams know, they would be returning there for the first race of the chase for the Cup just a few months later. MRN's Kyle Rickey remembers the atmosphere.
I remember that there was so much excitement at New Hampshire International Speedway for 2004. Not only did they have their traditional summer race and traditional fall race, but they had the first ever race in what is now the playoffs, then for the chase for the championship. Drivers didn't know what to expect. Fans really didn't know what to expect. Would the summer race look different because teams may be preparing for the September race? I remember that July race being hot and slick. Cars were sliding all over the place. A lot of incidents, especially late in the race.
On that New England afternoon, the Rocket Man scored his 4th pole of the season and led the field to the green flag.
And for the start, here's Barney Hall.
Sellout crowd here this afternoon, waiting for the action in the Siemens 300. Pace car behind the pit wall, down to the line. Green flag goes in the air and off and running to turn number 1. Ryan Newman tries to get a jump. He's going to get out front all by himself as he goes to turn 2.
Ryan Newman and his 12 car really did look like a rocket ship that day as he proceeded to lead the first 170 laps. The first driver to take the lead away from Newman was a driver who would become his teammate just a few years later.
As we have said so many times, catching the leader is one thing, getting around him is another. But Kurt Busch does not give up. Up in 3 and 4 seems to be his strong suit as he can get right on his bumper. Let's see what he does in 1 and 2.
He's right there, but they'll have to move around the lap car of Morgan Shepherd between 1 and 2. Ryan Newman makes his way past on the outside with Kurt Busch in hot pursuit.
And they'll remain nose to tail on in the back straightaway. Kurt Busch maybe going to set something up here. Newman right on his back bumper down in turn number 3. Newman slides up but has that better run off the corner.
Over the last 10 laps, just about every lap, it's been like this off turn 4. Newman goes wide. Busch goes low. This time the best run he's had all afternoon. He's going to get him in turn 1.
Out breaks him going into 1, and we've got a new leader for the first time this afternoon. Kurt Busch takes the 4. forward to the point and immediately pulls away.
Bush and Newman would both lead for stints in the latter stages of the race, but Bush found himself out front when a caution flag flew in the closing laps. He then had to hold off the likes of Newman and Jeff Gordon on a final three-lap dash to the checkered flag.
Green is out, and Kurt Busch is on the gas, trying to pull away from Jeff Gordon. Jeff doing all he can to stay with him.
Busch trying to make sure that Gordon can't even get to his back bumper in turn one, and he'll succeed at that. He's already got a car length in hand. Gordon second, Ryan Newman tries the outside in third.
Looked to the outside of Jeff Gordon, but couldn't make it stick. Falls back in the line, a car length behind Jeff Gordon. But it's Kurt Busch by a car length down in turn three.
Rusty Wallace will get back on the racetrack. He'll be able to finish at least running on the speedway. Out of the corner, back into the front straightaway, Kurt Busch, Jeff Gordon, and Ryan Newman trying to decide who's going to win this thing here. Two laps to go as Kurt Busch takes him over to turn two.
Busch by a car length, Gordon by a car length over Ryan Newman.
The battle for the fourth spot. Tony Stewart had a peek to the inside off of turn number two, but had to fall back in the line within a car length of Matt Kenseth. Everybody knows the tale through turn four.
They're about to see the white flag as they walk out of turn number four and back down to the line. Kurt Busch brings them down. One lap to go. He is two car lengths ahead of Jeff Gordon. They go to one.
Final time at a turn number one. Kurt Busch with two car lengths in hand over Jeff Gordon and Ryan Newman. Busch takes the four to the bottom of turn two.
Jeff Gordon have one more run. Let's see on the back straightaway. It's about three car lengths between himself and race leader Kurt Busch in turn three. The advantage opens up now to four car lengths heading for the checkered flag.
Kurt Busch won earlier this year at the Bristol Motor Speedway. He'll pick up win number two today here at New Hampshire International Speedway after starting back in the 32nd position. He gets the win in the Siemens 300.
You guys have had your fair share of bad luck in the last 10 races or so, including a couple of weeks ago at Chicago. Ninth in points entering today. You're up to sixth. It's got to be nice to have a little cushion as we head toward the chase for the Nextel Cup.
Well, this is where it all begins. When we come back here in September, all the fans should get excited and geared up for that because it's going to be just that. And I thought that we had to apply pressure this week and start our 10 races to go now, even though there is this many races left. We've got our work cut out for us.
What was surprising about Busch's victory that afternoon was that he started near the back of the pack. A poor qualifying effort saw him roll off 32nd at a track where track position was a premium. Busch remembers that slip-up in qualifying and how his car came to life during the race.
Yeah, I think I slipped up in qualifying. I really like a loose race car on the short tracks. And we didn't quite tighten it up or didn't quite find the right balance for Q. So we started in the back, but yet back then there was super long green flag runs. That's where my loose setup and the loose feel in the car would play dividends. So that's, you don't see that very often now. You know, there's not many runs or laps that are run over 100 laps in a race now. But back then, we would run long green flag runs.
Following New Hampshire on the schedule was another trip to the tricky triangle for the second race in just 6 weeks at the Pocono Raceway. Following his win there in June, Jimmy Johnson was the heavy favorite to win the Pennsylvania 500, but he was going to have to work to get up to the front. Johnson qualified 14th, while Front Row Joe, that's Joe Nemechek, led the field to the green flag.
Pennsylvania 500 about to get underway. Green flag goes in the air, and they race for turn number one. On the break, real quick, jumping out front is Casey Mears. He gets out there in clean air all by himself, and Joe Nemechek goes with him. The scramble is going to be for third place as they go to one.
While Nemechek looks out early, Johnson was able to find his way to the front by lap 32. From that point on, those who called Johnson the favorite were proven right, as he would go on to lead more than half of the 200 laps that day. But late in the race, it looked like we might be dealing with a case of deja vu. A caution flag flew with less than 10 laps to go, just like in the race weeks prior. But unlike the Pocono 500, where the fans were left disappointed because the race ended under caution, this time track officials were able to clear the track and set up a restart with five to go. Even though that bunched up the field, Johnson had no issues holding the lead.
Here's Jimmy Johnson for the final time off the Long Pond straightaway across the tunnel turn, continuing to pull away as Johnson now clears turn two and heads to the short straightaway. Here comes Jimmy Johnson for the final time off the end of the short chute, setting up for the corner number three, heading for the checkers. It's all Jimmy Johnson, as it's been so much today, well in front of the field. He's been in charge all afternoon here at Pocono, and Jimmy Johnson will complete the Pocono sweep. He won here in June, he wins again here today in the Pennsylvania 500, giving him four wins this year. Victories at Darlington, at Charlotte, at Pocono here in June, and now today in the Pennsylvania 500, it's a low Chevy going to victory lane.
The strength of Johnson's car was on full display in that final run to the finish. Even though the final stretch of green was only five laps, Jimmy Johnson was able to pull away and win by over 2 seconds.
Jimmy Johnson getting a big hug from his crew chief, Chad Knaus. Have you guys ever had a car that's this dominant?
This was a lot like the Lowe's car that we had, and then also earlier in the year here. So, but it's a tough sport. It's a tough business. If you look at last week, we didn't have the car to beat. This week, we were on our game and had everything under control, and it let me really explore as a driver and find new lines and find a way to stay faster than everybody else longer. Really, my line selection, I think, was a big key today, and I was able to do some really cool stuff.
With that victory, Johnson became one of many drivers who were able to score a summer sweep at Pocono over the years. Kyle Ricci speaks to why that became a common theme.
Pocono went through a few years where drivers and teams just seemed to figure it out. A racetrack that is nearly impossible to figure out. Three completely different corners, three completely different length straightaways. But there was a time in the early 2000s that teams found the magic combination. And in 2004, Jimmy Johnson and his Hendrick Motorsports team figured it out, started toward the front in both races, led the most laps in both races, and pretty much dominated both events that year. And that would continue for that team for a couple of more years and into 2005 and 2006 before other teams caught up. But that year, it was all Jimmy Johnson and that 48 bunch at the Tricky Triangle.
What makes Pocono so unique is that its corners are all based off of corners from different racetracks. One of those corners resembled the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and that's exactly where Cup Series teams were headed next for the 11th running of the Brickyard 400. That event saw something that we had never seen before in the NASCAR Cup Series, and something that had become quite the hot topic in 2004, a green, white, checkered finish. After races at Talladega and Pocono both ended controversially and under caution, NASCAR decided to make the green, white, checkered rule, something that had already been commonplace in the NASCAR Truck Series, a rule across the board. NASCAR President Mike Helton explains why the time was right.
So as the truck developed and became its own personality, and Xfinity wasn't much older than trucks, but it had more maturity to it and everything. And there were so many of the Xfinity races that partnered up with Cup at the weekend. We could use the trucks to experiment with things because they were more often than not away somewhere else racing and see what the reaction would be like. You know, the controlled pit stops, the green-white checkers, the overtimes and those types of things. So we had some experience through the truck series. And then it was just a matter of when's the right time to do it. And it, like I say, that whole culture around the early 2000s, I think we decided, all right, if we're gonna push this domino over, let's go ahead and do some of these other things and kind of rewrite it so that we can rest, let the industry learn all the new things, the fans learn all the new elements, and see how it shakes up.
While fans were ecstatic over the rule change, the same could not be said for the entire garage. Reigning Cup Series champion Matt Kenseth was not a fan when the decision came down.
The green-white checkered, I hated that rule. And I very much disliked two wide restarts. I always felt like, and now again, that's changed as the cars became more equal and the same speed. And like even the last few years I raced, I mean, it was all about the restarts. It was all about qualifying. It was all about a restart and being in front of everybody because the cars are just so aero dependent. You just can't, you know, if somebody gets in front of you, you can be 3-4 tenths faster at a mile and a half or somewhere and you're not going to catch them and pass them. And it didn't used to be like that. So when they first made that rule, I was not a big fan just because I felt like, man, you race for 4 hours, and if you're leading a race and you have the best car, and now there's a caution with 5 minutes to go in a four-hour race, why should they have to rack it up and do a restart and let the leader, you know, make a mistake or get beat when he's really the guy who won the race, the four-hour event that we called the race?
While drivers were worried that the new rule could void an entire afternoon of hard work, Chad Knaus also notes that crew chiefs had to take note of the rule and the impact it could have on race management and strategy.
There was a race around that period of time where everybody came down pit road, took four tires, and we took two tires at Atlanta, restarted up front, and were able to win that race. So that was a pretty neat one, and that took that away. right? So it was something that was more difficult to call those races. You just had to plan for it. You had to make sure that you took proper calculations for your fuel. And it was only one at that time, right? So you only have one shot. So it wasn't that big of a deal. It was just different.
Now, back to the on-track action that day in Indianapolis. The race was caution-filled. A grand total of 13 yellow flags flew that day. But even with those field-bunching restarts, Jeff Gordon was the dominant man once again. He led over half the race, but still had to hold off 1996 Indianapolis winner Dale Jarrett on that first ever green, white, checkered finish for the Cup Series.
The white flag is out for Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon, 2.5 miles away from being a four-time winner of the Brickyard 400, leads Dale Jarrett by 10 car lengths, but Sadler goes after DJ for second.
Dale Jarrett cannot catch him. He's got a hold on Sadler. Gordon on his way to a win. They're going to hang on for another 3/4 of a lap in turn two.
Wednesday, August the 4th, Jeff Gordon, his 33rd birthday. Today, trying to make it four here at the Brickyard. He has the lead halfway down the backstretch.
He is at the halfway point of the back straightaway with Dale Jarrett and Elliott Sadler in tow. That's a battle for second place. Jeff Gordon works his way through turn number three. We've got a car that's cut a tire in the back straightaway. Chuck Carlin helped take him home. The leader in four.
Jeff Gordon has a commanding lead. It looks like he's going to win the Brickyard 400. Dale Jarrett runs in second. Elliott Sadler's in third.
For the fourth time in 11 years, the young man who cut his racing teeth in nearby Pittsboro, Indiana, will win the Brickyard 400. Jeff Gordon, the winner of the 11th Brickyard 400. Dale Jarrett is second. Elliott Sadler is third on a beautiful day in central Indiana. Jeff Gordon has become the first four-time winner of a stock car event at the Brickyard 400.
That victory would put Gordon in rarefied air at Indy. It was his fourth win in the Brickyard 400, a race that had become one of NASCAR's crown jewels.
Jeff Gordon, A.J. Foyt, Al Unser Sr., Rick Mears, the four-time winners at Indianapolis. How does it feel to be one of the elite?
It feels amazing. I don't know. I can't compare four times in a stock car compared to what my heroes like Rick Mears and A.J. Foyt and those guys did here. It's just a very special day for this entire team. What an amazing year these guys are having. I've just been having so much fun behind the wheel of this DuPont Chevrolet all year long. These guys make it so special. And Hendrick Motorsports, man, they are on top of it right now. This one's for Papa Joe. I tell you what, it's been a tough month for the Hendrick family. Days like today, we know that Papa Joe's smiling down on us, and it's just awesome. There's just no feeling in the world like winning at this speedway.
While on that afternoon, Gordon was emotional thinking about his heroes in victory lane, he now remembers that race for the momentum it created with the chase looming.
I think you're looking for momentum and confidence as a team, as a driver throughout a season, and trying to figure out how to carry that on. And so you want to capitalize on big moments and the timing of that part of the season was important to go get a win at the biggest event in the summer, one of the biggest events all season, certainly a track that I loved, and send a message to your competitors and carry that, through to the end of the season.
That victory was Gordon's fifth of the season, breaking a tie with his teammate Jimmy Johnson, who had four to that point. Johnson still held the points lead by 97 over Gordon. But even more importantly than Johnson's position in the standings was Ryan Newman's. Newman sat 10th in the points, the final spot that guaranteed you a berth in the chase. With only five races remaining until that cutoff, he held a 32-point advantage over Casey Kane for that last spot and a 33-point advantage over Jeremy Mayfield. Next week on Episode 6, we'll detail that final five-race stretch before the chase, a stretch that includes a road course in Watkins Glen, the Bristol Night Race, and a dramatic regular season finale at Richmond Raceway.
White flag goes up for Jeremy Mayfield. Let's watch him work his way around and head back down to victory lane if he can get back to the start-finish line.
Off turn two for the final time. Jeremy Mayfield comes to the back straightaway as Bobby Labonte is off the pace behind him, running out of gas. Mayfield goes back to turn three, looking for the checker flag.
Last victory back in June of 2000 at Pocono, Pennsylvania. Tonight in Richmond, Virginia, it's Jeremy Mayfield going back to the winner's circle as he wins the Chevy Rock and Roll 400.
Until then, I'm Mike Bagley. For all of us here at the Motor Racing Network, thank you for joining us on NASCAR Live Presents 2004 Chasing History.
Hey everyone, it's Kyle Busch. At Cheddar's, you get a variety of American classics in a place that feels like home. They have comfort food like hand-breaded chicken tenders, homemade chicken pot pie with nearly a half a pound of roasted chicken under that golden flaky crust, slow-smoked baby back ribs so big they're falling off the plate, all for unbeatable prices. And the best part? A free honey butter croissant for every guest. Now that's how they do it. Cheddar's. Get a lot for not a lot.
Craftsman in your hand, enough to stop me, yeah. Not a chair, quick to stand, only the engine repair. Craftsman in your hand, nothing you can't do. Make your lawn, make your John, or that kitchen hat on. Craftsman in your hand, enough to stop me, yeah.
From outdoor care to home and auto repair, do it with Craftsman. Find the tools, equipment, and storage you need at your local Lowe's, Ace Hardware, or Craftsman.com.